Is it worth remembering or should it stay lost? We watched Dude, Where's My Car from 2000 to see if we could redeem it. Were we successful? Find out after the theme!
Good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy.
Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project Redeeming Features Cast, this time checking out Dude, Where's My Car from the year 2000 to see if it is redeemable. I am Trevor Holland. I am joined by my very good friend, co-host and king of cult cinema in Brisbane.
Christian Fletcher.
Thank you, Trevor.
Actually, not just Brisbane, you're king of cult cinema. Full stop.
Oh, thank you, Trevor. I'm sure there's a lot of other people who would take the title, but I'll happily take it. Thank you.
It's yours. As far as I'm concerned, you've got it. Now, as I mentioned, we're going to talk about Dude, Where's My Car from the year 2000.
Yeah.
There will be spoilers.
A movie that I believe was it suggested, or did you come up with this one, Trevor? I couldn't remember, actually.
I did suggest it last time, after the last movie, which I don't feel like naming right now, because...
Yes, and I've already forgotten what it is, so don't name it.
I won't name it. But yeah, we're talking about a movie from 2000. There will be spoilers, so if you don't want the movie spoiled, it's 20 years on, but, you know, if you don't want the movie spoiled, make sure you watch it before listening to the rest of this podcast.
And it's not really that kind of movie anyway. You can't spoil too much.
Pretty much.
That's my spoiler.
Indeed. Now, what I'll do is, before we get too far into it, I had a bit of a dig and I did find some awards for this one. And would you believe there's not a Razzie in sight? Now, they're all nominations.
Yeah, I'm interested, actually.
Yeah, they're all nominations only. It didn't actually win anything, but the Las Vegas Films Critics Society Awards nominated Ashton Kutcher for the Best Male Newcomer. The MTV Movie and TV Awards, it was a nominee for Breakthrough Male Performance for Ashton Kutcher. And the Teen Choice Awards, because it's such a teen-friendly movie, it was nominated for Choice Comedy, Choice Actor for Ashton Kutcher, and Choice Chemistry between Ashton and Sean.
Yeah, especially during a certain car scene, which we'll probably get to. But
yes.
But isn't it interesting, Trevor, just remembering when this came out in 2000? I Googled it because I wasn't sure if it was 2000 or 2001. So this was kind of wedged between the whole when that 70s show had kind of taken off after a couple of seasons. And I think would have been after the American Pie, the first American Pie movie, but not the second one with Stifler or Sean William Scott. So looking at it from that perspective, that's kind of where we're coming in, I suppose. I do remember when it came out, but surprisingly wasn't motivated to watch it back then.
Fair enough. I don't think I saw it till well after 2000. I think I just found it at some random cheap rental one day and just went, I'll check that out. But anyway, so what we do is we'll start with our turkey trivia. So this is where we talk turkey about the movie and then get into some trivia. It's all in the name. Why do I keep explaining it? Let's move on. This movie is rated 5.5 out of 10 on IMDb, so right in the middle there. And to give you an idea, when I was looking at IMDb and I saw the lists that they have for various movies, it was on a list for the worst movies of the year 2000, and it was on the list for the must-watch movies of the year 2000. So take from that as you will.
So there you go. There's a curiosity factor there, I think, as well.
Quite possibly. Now, it had a budget of $13 million, so quite cheap, and it ended up grossing $73 million.
I'm actually really surprised. Whoa. Okay, they were stars at the time, but they weren't big stars. So even drawing that amount was quite, unusual. But there must have been a demand for bro stoner comedies at that time. I can't remember.
Quite possibly. Actually, with a bit of the trivia I found, apparently it wasn't going to be Dude, Where's My Car initially. The film story came from a rejected live-action Beavis and Butthead movie concept from the late 90s.
Oh my God, that puts so much in perspective. Glad they never did that, by the way, because that would just be like doing a live-action Simpsons. It'd just be weird.
It would be
weird. Yeah, I can actually see that now. Interesting. So maybe they could have made this movie if it was, even if it wasn't Beavis and Butthead. They probably should have made it in 1995 instead of 1990. It would have been probably a bit more relevant. I don't know.
Yeah, potentially. When Ashton Kutcher first read the script for the film, he almost turned down the role because he thought it was very stupid. But when he got to the You Got a Tattoo scene, he could not stop laughing, and that's why he took the part. There was a sequel titled Seriously, Dude, Where's My Car? That was planned, but never developed, and eventually it was scrapped.
Yeah, they'll do something weird and it'll come out in 10 years from now where, I don't know, maybe no one cares. I don't think they would have cared 2 years after it. The first one came out.
No, I think this kind of came and went, didn't it? Now, for some reason, this one really took me. This is the last bit of trivia I've got, and I found this amazing. So when they're at the Chinese drive-thru restaurant, the Chinese characters on the speaker box read Hai Yu Ni in Mandarin, which is translated to as there anything else, or you could say, and then.
Oh, Trevor, it had to come up eventually. And yeah.
Oh, I think that's going to come up a lot, because let's face it, it comes up a lot in the movie.
Oh my God, yes. But yeah, that is quite interesting, actually.
I just thought that was something very clever for this movie.
And that's the thing about this movie. I think it probably took another review to kind of point it out to me, but how clever it is. It's a stupid movie, I suppose, essentially, when you look at it from the outset. But the fact that it throws in so many, I suppose, not just movie, but pop culture tropes, like a lot of that sort of visual gag stuff. It doesn't rely just on visual gags, but there's probably a lot more happening, even though it's probably appealing to a lower denominator than would probably get it would understand half those references.
Yeah, well, you definitely can't say that not much happens in this movie. A lot happens in this movie.
Oh, I know. That's the thing. One of those movies where I literally was worried blinking or reaching to get a drink, I was worried I was going to miss a whole new thing. And I think I did do that at one point. I'm like, oh shit, that's right, there's all the four spies suddenly appear. I'm like, oh, what did I miss? Because things do just literally zap in. And I suppose that's entertaining. And it kind of fits. I don't know what year Harold and Kumar went to the White Castle. I think it might be late 90s, it might be early 2000s, but it was very much of that kind of era. And I haven't seen a Cheech and Chong movie, but I assume that kind of fits that whole... I'd probably say more a stoner road movie where it's all about kind of getting to the end goal. But I don't know if it was just me, but you literally went at the end where he goes, oh, dude, where's the car? I think in the last 30 seconds, I literally had forgotten all about that.
Fair enough. Well, before we talk too much more about the movie, now, as we mentioned before, this is the redeeming features cast. So this is where we take a movie with questionable quality, reviews, performance, reputation, and see if we can redeem it. So we need to set our baseline. So I went to Amazon and I dug up this review simply titled Terrible. Now, we did not rent this movie expecting anything other than a bit of silliness. The movie was so bad, it never rose to the standard of silliness. I can only assume that one must be ingesting the local herb in order to be remotely amused by this film. This movie was worse than Dumb and Dumber. It was worse than Austin Powers 2 and worse than The Life Aquatic. That said, the... and then scene was the only redeeming part. Hey, that's our job. Too bad it occurs.
There we go.
Too bad it occurs 10 minutes into the film. This one scene keeps making you think there might be some sort of redemption before the end. No luck. I wish this could get 0 stars. But they gave it 1 star.
Oh, there you go, Trevor. Even the haters seem to mention the Chinese scene, so it has to be worth something, even if the rest of it isn't for that person. So, interesting baseline for us.
Indeed. And right from the outset, the opening text, which says, the following movie is based on actual events. It's like, you what?
Yeah, literally taking the piss. I can't even remember. Oh, that's what I was going to say. What company is this? But, oh, my God, Trevor, just can I just say, obviously, love you, Disney, you're awesome. I've got nothing against you, but so good seeing the 20th Century Fox logo back in the innocent 2000s that does the full version without being altered in any way. So
yeah.
We know we're going into a certain point. But, yeah, that opening title, yeah, already we're throwing those tropes out there. But having now seen the movie, I'm looking back at my notes from when I've written about the opening credits before I'd seen the movie. I'm like, why are there ostriches? Why are there? And it's so funny how all of the stuff in, they're almost going for a, I've got here Bill and Ted meets Bond, which is kind of the vibe I'm getting, especially from the opening credits. And there's a few other things I'll say that's kind of Bill and Ted-ish.
Yeah. I mean, definitely hits in that sort of dopey buddy comedy, but
yeah. And then at the same time too, already being tongue-in-cheek without establishing themselves as being too bad. Like, to me, that was just, with the ostriches and all that, that was just them doing their version of a Bond theme, very tongue-in-cheek. That was just what I was getting. And then I see Jennifer Garner's name flash up in the credits, and I'm like, what? Am I watching the right movie?
Yeah, there's a few names in this movie. There really is. I like how just of the opening credits, I was thinking more, okay, hang on, it's the supporting cast, because the supporting cast gets a dance number in the opening credits, because they've got the We Are Hot Chicks and the Nordic guys in there as well.
Oh,
and then suddenly ostriches, and then the animated Pussycat logo of the strip club. It's like, what? Everything but the main characters sort of like featuring in this opening credits.
And as I said, I'd probably be one of those movies I'd probably watch back again and be able to go, oh, okay, that's references to that, because honestly, in the opening scenes, what have I've actually written here? I'm already groaning about what this movie is going to be. So there you go. So that was by the opening credits. I appreciated the little touches, but yeah, I'm already wondering. And then I see, it's funny we're talking about Jennifer Garner. I then see Christy Swanson. And I'm like, she's the actress from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Am I right, Trevor?
Yes. And many better movies as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, sorry to mention that, but I actually don't think we've looked at that movie yet, but we'll keep that for another time.
If we must. Oh, that's a bad movie.
Write it down. Continue.
But yeah, they don't waste any time at all, though. Certainly not with introducing the sort of people that Jesse and Chester are. Just, you know, they've got Chester watching an animal documentary and basically just literally aping or imitating the chimpanzee that's on the screen.
And then as again setting us up for things that we're going to probably hear a little bit later, but not a huge plot thing. But yeah, we're definitely getting set up straight away, which a lot of these stoner movies do, these kind of layabouts where you are almost waiting for someone just to break through the door and go, shit, you were worth $10,000 or something like that. You've got to do something, because they usually don't waste too much time setting up stuff. But yeah. I know what you mean. They give us a pretty good impression.
Yeah, well, they don't waste time with their boss turning up saying, oi, where's my pizzas?
I don't know if it was just me, but seeing the pizza, it was a clever gag, throwing on the pizza and then one piece comes out one at a time. But I don't know, it kind of turned me off ever eating pizza again. I don't know.
They go, oh, look, there's a unicorn!
And we fall through it every time. But again, the sort of gags or the level of humour with, what was his name, Mr. Pizza Coney or something like that. Pizza Coney or something like that. So they literally didn't hold back. And as I'll probably get to a little bit later on, we're I won't say innocent 2000s, but we're still in a very politically incorrect period of filmmaking, kind of on the cusp there, where a few things don't sit too well with you. So, but we'll get to that a bit later.
Well, I mean, we might as well get that out of the way, because
I'm sure we've had similar thoughts, I think in like with a lot of film, especially, you know, I don't like to say anything I wasn't going to say, we've still got an innocence about it, the era we the movie comes out. But I think there's a lot of naivety about what is spoken about, especially in terms of transgender. And yeah, it was definitely one of those movies that, especially when you look at movies from, say, 20 years ago, before people are a little bit more politically correct and sort of a bit more aware of how to broach certain subjects. But in terms of dealing with a transgender person, there was definitely some interesting stuff. Even the scene with the blind kid was a bit kind of weird for me, or made me feel a bit awkward.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, well, I mean, look, the misogyny and sexism in this movie is pretty ripe for the era and for the time, and, you know, it's probably not too much worse than what you see now, but that's certainly...
Oh, yeah.
Certainly one particular scene where they do introduce the trans character, Tanya.
That was, yeah.
And, you know, she gives Jesse a big kiss on the lips and offers him a special lap dance, and then as soon as, you know, she reveals that she's transgender and has a penis, he does the whole spitting and pulling his tongue. And it's just like everything else in this movie, these two guys are so easygoing and pretty much rolling with everything up to a full-on kissing scene between the two of them.
Which I was going to say, they can do that.
Like, which is one of the highlights of the movie, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And it's just like this one particular scene, this one particular thing is just too much for this one guy that doesn't seem to be thrown by anything else that happens, up to and including giant alien women. So,
the second part where anything goes, I suppose, we sort of forget reality. But just I don't know if it was him using the term. I might have even been the transgender person saying, I'm a gender challenged male, which to me was a weird choice of that character can't necessarily have to be the villain, but you think they're going to be the main one. And when everything's kind of rectified later on, what were they trying to get? Like, oh, yeah, the suitcase with the money in it. It's kind of all, oh, cool, you found it, cool, thank you, bye. And there's still, 15 minutes of the movie to go. Like, it was a really weird how they set that character up as this villain that I thought was going to be consistent, but shouldn't have probably been there in the first place, or at least referred to in a better way.
Like, when she did appear, though, I actually enjoyed her character quite a bit, to be honest. I found her...
Kind of, that's what I mean. She would have been a good villain to have the whole way through rather than just some girl that gets her bag and then it's all kind of over and she moves on. Yeah, it could have had a bit more, climactic plot development behind it, but I suppose that's stupid thinking about that for a movie like this.
Very true, very true. It turns out that the suitcase full of money is is only a very minor part of the whole thing that they're trying to retrace their steps from the night before, where, of course, they can't remember a thing because they were wasted.
Okay. Again, in one of those plots that we've got, like movies like The Hangover and Harold and Kumar and all these other sort of movies where not necessarily they forget what happens the night before. Well, yeah, probably in the case of The Hangover where they kind of wake up and have to retrace their steps. And even though we're kind of given an idea, Trevor, we still never get flashbacks as such to what really happens. So it's all been kind of pieced together, I suppose. The ultimate stoner movie, because it's all been put together in pieces.
Well, yeah, essentially you're finding out what happened along with them. So
yeah, you know, and that's the clever bit about it. Yeah. And then I know we say no spoilers, but again, I love the big reveal at the end where we've forgotten about the whole where his bloody car is, and we find out it was really just a postal van parked in front at that split second.
I don't think the postal van was there when they first go out and do the whole...
Because I can't remember if there was a shot across the road, but yeah.
Yeah, so it was the following day, I guess, that they come out and you know, dude, there's your car, shibby.
I think I noticed that before the credits it was an hour 17, hour 18, and honestly there were some moments where I thought I was surprised they could even get to that length of the film. Like, you know, I appreciate some of the gags, but, you know, they brought the obvious ones out, like with the tattoos and like, oh, mine says dude, mine says sweet, mine says dude, mine says, yeah. And we keep going. And I suppose in many ways the and then joke, it was so ridiculous you couldn't just keep, you couldn't help but go with it. But then even the last gag of the whole movie is the bringing back about the tattoos again. So there were many times where they took a gag and kind of just ran with it a bit too much, but I think the movie would have only gone for an hour if they hadn't, so.
Very much so. They had to keep a few things coming back. But what they kept coming back, I mean, of course, Tanya, who, if she hadn't been I suppose, cast in such a bad light initially, I think could have been a much more fun character. But then you've got the space cult, Hail Zoltar.
Which sort of comes up in Act 3, sort of changes the whole plot, even though the plot's already been kind of weird, but yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where sort of magical stuff starts happening, where you start to go, okay, this couldn't be real. You know, I'm talking scenes of the Rubik's Cube. And I don't know about you, Trevor, I know time zones and all these kind of game arcades can be kind of captivating, but I'd notice 12 people around doing all these weird and wonderful things in the middle of the game arcade. I thought that was kind of funny.
yeah. So, like, I suppose, yeah, we'll talk about some of the other more questionable content, like with the actual bad guys being the, who are you guys? We are hot chicks. Yes. Oh. Yes, you are, Leah.
Yeah, that's... So those of you who haven't gathered that are watching, that's the kind of humour that we were kind of dealing with here.
And you mentioned before that they have a whole scene where we get to step away from Jesse and Chester for a while and go and spend some time with their girlfriends who are running a camp for disabled children. And the boyfriend of Christy Swanson sends the hot chicks there to mess with Jesse and Chester's relationship, and they come across a blind kid who says, "I've got to touch faces to see people," and then he moves his hands down and starts fondling their breasts.
Yes, which is just like, and that's at the moment that they turn over and go, "Oh my god!"
Well, let's talk about some of the other stuff, because one thing I think which is consistent across stoner movies is they do have pretty good soundtracks. I've got to admit, like when they're rolling through town, they just leave their friend with the pet dog that has the marijuana pipe.
Oh yeah,
and
quite a consistent gag we've got there. But
and then like a bit of Voodoo Lady from Ween starts playing, and then they're going, okay, I can get into this.
Playing something a little bit different too, not just the obvious sort of thing. Probably because they probably expect to be stoners listening to this at 12 o'clock, not really caring too much, but hey, you picked up on it.
I always try to pick up on music if the movie's questionable, that's for sure.
Yeah. Hey, as long as there's a good soundtrack, there's got to be something good. But yeah. That seems to be what it is very much about, like a whole heap of different set pieces where, you know, by the third act where the space people kind of come through, it's kind of just like they've thrown everything at you before, by then. It doesn't really matter too much. Like, I did think it was weird when the Rubik's Cube jumped up in the game arcade and started to spin around and be all sci-fi. I'm like, actually, this is the first time where it didn't feel like it could have been still somewhat real, but I was probably weird questioning it at that stage into the movie.
Yeah. If anything, it's like, I almost wanted to just see more of Jesse and Chester's relationship, because there's times through there, we mentioned before about the kiss where they pull up beside Fabio in the car and they're trying to outdo him. And so Fabio kisses the model that he's with. So they just have a full on casual kiss, and you know, the sort of friendship where dudes can kiss each other is pretty cool.
But when you think about it too, she looks over like, okay, you guys going to go. And then when they do kiss, she looks mortified. And I'm like, hang on, weren't you kind of like, yeah, you next?
Yeah.
But anyway.
Because I didn't expect them to actually do it. So, you know, it was good that... And they look at each other for a second and then just do this nod. And it's like, okay, that's gold. And a bit later on, I don't know why this line sticks with me. It's one of my favourite lines of the movie is when... is when the twins dump them. And they go, "I've got this feeling in my stomach. I think it's love. You sure you don't need to sit on the toilet?" And they go through this whole conversation. He goes, "Oh, hang on, I've got to take a crap." And it just goes, "I told you. I know your body."
Yeah, they know each other a little bit too well.
For some reason, that line, I just found that one of the funniest lines in the entire movie.
I suppose by that stage, yeah, you knew that anything could happen. They were very much the 2000s Bill and Ted, I suppose. But like, as I said, so many different set pieces. I've mentioned the tattoos and everything, but like just little funny things like like just little shots, like when they had the scene with the ostriches and the ostrich just happened to like stick its head into the top of the car, just look around, like just little things like that that made me laugh out loud, even though you're just like, hang on, it's just been so ridiculous. But I think once you realise where these movies are going, you can kind of enjoy it a little bit more. So,
yeah, indeed. I mean, look, honestly, I mean, we've mentioned the giant alien chick at the end and they've got the continuum transfunctioner, which they've got to track down, and they've
yeah. I've got transmission functioner, but yours sounds better.
they need to have that little pop thing
so it could run the hour 23. Oh gosh, but yeah, it definitely, as I said, works in the vein of those sort of stoner movies. So it probably would work a little bit better if you were stoned at like 12 o'clock than watching it normally. So I don't know.
But yeah, the whole point of trying to find the car, you know, because they're trying to find the presents for the twins' birthday, because the twins have promised them, the anniversary, I think, because the twins have offered them special treats, and the whole way through they think it's going to be sex. So I'm kind of glad.
It's not going to be.
Yeah. So I was kind of glad at the end when the treats end up being monogrammed berets. It kind of just, if it had have ended on that, I would have thought that would have, you know, helped make up for so much of the incredibly, you know, just crass sexist humor through most of the movie. But then, aliens gave them a couple of necklaces to give the twins, which make their boobs go bigger, which the twins find absolutely delightful, apparently. And it's just like, really?
Okay. Yeah, I agree. You thought it could have been so much more redeemable than that at that last minute. Oh, remember who this audience is for?
Indeed.
But yeah, I thought they could have done without it for sure. And I don't think they'd be so forgiving or okay with it.
Yeah, the twins showed that they were pretty serious and pretty straight-laced. I did like the bit, though, when they went to the twins' house and they saw the yard from the outside and the mess everywhere. There was just a guy passed out on the roof. That was a nice touch.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's the thing. And there's so many visual gags and things like that. And I think, as I said, I've read a review afterwards that mentioned a lot of, you know, TV tropes and, you know, movie tropes. Like a movie we have looked at for the podcast, but Attack of the 50-Foot Woman, they threw that in there at one stage too. And I was kind of hoping it would be more of the Christy Swanson character kind of coming and picking up the boyfriend that had been such a dick. But again, the whole boyfriend thing wasn't sort of developed as much. I thought he'd be sort of the main villain of the whole thing. But he kind of just needed to come along and be the one that broke that transmitter.
Pretty much, and just make crass jokes and be the stone of bashin time.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much his entire
The dickhead, character. Yeah.
Yeah, the dickhead. He was a good dickhead. And after all the hilarity that ensued, you've always got to wonder if they have outtakes in the closing credits.
Oh, my God. And I know we still occasionally get bloopers or outtakes nowadays. But it's such an early 2000s thing. It almost like was meant to happen, wasn't it? To have one of these at the end of the movie.
Because we've got to stick through the credits, and I've got to admit, I didn't mind listening to the music in the closing credits.
Oh, I was probably quite impressed too. Like, I noticed it was two different songs too. Yeah.
The very final, last second. And then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so for those who haven't seen it, you'll hear a bit of reference to "and then." Probably could be the most annoying thing you've ever heard, but it's kind of got some humour to it. And how many people, Trevor, haven't wanted to bash the takeaway microphone in the drive-through? So I was kind of living it through that.
Yeah, well, let's put it this way. "And then" is pretty much the only reference that Susie and I will make about this movie, or use from this movie, because let's face it, we do use a lot of references from pop culture, things that we like. And it's like the only thing that we agree on is in this movie is worth referencing.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, there wouldn't be too much else you want to reference for this. So, yeah, but I do like it. And I'd like to award the best name the least thought put into a Chinese restaurant name, just calling it Chinese food.
Yep, indeed. Indeed. Well, that's got us to the end of the movie. Christian, was there anything else that stood out to you that you wanted to mention?
Oh, not at this stage. I do have a couple of awards. They didn't have Razzies, but a couple of awards. Of course, worst representation of a transgender character, but probably more worst representation towards the transgender character. that's probably the way I should awkwardly announce it. Worst Fabio cameo. Trevor, if you're going to have a cameo from Fabio, you expect a little bit. You'd expect a little bit more, but we got payoff with that kissing scene, so I'll pay that one. And what was the other thing? Oh, yeah, best name for a Chinese restaurant, Chinese food. And then.
Oh, good. Well, thinking of and then we got on to, I guess, working out if this movie is actually redeemable. Now, I did choose this Christian, so I guess... After you, my friend.
Oh, damn it. I forgot that went in that order. But look, Trevor, I've got a bit more of a perspective now knowing that you recommended this novelist. Not that that matters too much, but I can see that it's got that fun and that kind of referential visual gag type stuff that you can pick up on as a movie. I really missed it the first time round, but the good thing about this movie is at least the leads are likeable. You know, there's nothing really mean-spirited in it. It's really just... I come back to me really stoned at midnight watching this movie, and I think I would probably appreciate it a hell of a lot more. But I really appreciate it. I think I'd like to see it again just more to take in sort of the genre tropes and the different pop culture references. But all I can say and then is whether it's redeemable. It's so tricky. Its existence is still a bit baffling, and I felt my brain was dying. But honestly, Trevor, I'm probably going to have to say irredeemable. Even though it is on the cusp, but yeah, we're looking at it from a film perspective, not a stoner perspective.
Fair enough. Yeah, I've got to admit, I was very borderline as well. And I suppose...
Yeah, tricky, yeah.
Very tricky. So, look, I mean, from redeemable aspects, there were a number of good songs on the soundtrack, and some of the gags were mildly amusing, really, with a couple of very rare standouts.
Yeah.
When Jesse and Chester got a bit more camp with their relationship, it just seemed to be a lot more fun. I mean, honestly, those two did have very good chemistry, and when it was played up to, that's probably when this movie was at its best. But of course, a lot of the gags were, I think, were questionable. Even the year 2000 was a bit questionable, and unfortunately, the whole transphobic stuff is just like, just... I know there was a lot of it back then, but it's just like, come on, guys. And then at the end, look, I think, again, it's very, 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 very fine line, I think, on this one. But I found that with the relationship between Jesse and Chester being so positive, and there was just enough amusing stuff in here for me to think that it pushed it just over the line to be just redeemable.
Look, that's fair enough, Trevor. Yeah, maybe ask me another 10 years, I might be able to reevaluate it.
Yeah, I think definitely is one that also helps very much with your, let's say, state of mind at the time.
Yeah. Check back to me then.
Oh, good. Okay, well, there we go. We've got a split decision, meaning that people are just going to have to make up their own mind. But the title of this podcast is Redeeming Features. So we do like to finish on a high note. So I went back to Amazon and I found another review. This one's a bit longer, to be honest. And I mentioned something that I could have mentioned during, but we'll save it for the review. Okay, the smartest stupid movie I've ever seen. Waterwall fun and a masterpiece in the dumb movie genre. There's a lot I like about this movie. It has heart and has some likable and interesting characters, and it does a lot with a little. They seem to have set out to make a dumb movie that could be enjoyed with minimal brain power expenditure, and they could have used that as permission to slack off and create something lazy that was momentarily entertaining and ultimately forgettable. Instead, they use the dumb movie premise as an excuse to completely ignore questions about plausibility and create an engaging plot that makes sense by its own bizarre logic. A lot of thought and heart went into this movie. It's the best dumb movie it could have been, and maybe the smartest stupid movie I've ever seen. Plus, he gets Prop 4, will now use the power of the Contemporary Transfunctioner to banish you to Hoboken, New Jersey, which is a great out-of-context line. 5 stars.
And I've been to Hoboken, New Jersey. You don't really want to go there.
Oh, dear.
Oh, wow. So, hey, yeah. And I do appreciate the smartest stupid movie. Maybe not necessarily the smartest, but I can see the stupid cleverness of the whole thing, actually.
Indeed. It's got its... Yeah. I mean, I guess that's what you can say about this movie. It's got its moments.
Oh, yeah. Probably wouldn't sustain... I wouldn't say I laughed out loud the full hour 23, but sometimes moments is all you need.
Indeed. So, well, that's Dude, Where's My Car? With a split decision. I guess we need to think about what the next movie we're going to watch is. And I'm wondering, Christian, if you have any suggestions.
Well, I might need you to double-check the year for me. I won't be able to give that to you offhand. Look, I hadn't looked at my list again recently and was thinking I really need to think about a podcast movie. And this particular title, I do watch a lot of American films, as we all do, but the title of this movie has come up a couple of times in the last couple of months, and I thought, hang on, that's on my list. There's got to be a reason for that. So don't quote me on this, 1998, it might be a little bit later, but we're going to go back to a movie which I believe contributed to killings, I suppose, for the interim Eddie Murphy's career. It's a movie called The Adventures of Pluto Nash. You've probably heard of it, Trevor, but Americans often go that it was the movie which pretty much ended Eddie Murphy having a big run of, I suppose, box office hits. I think it might be early 2000s, late 90s, but I might need you to double check that.
That's all good. Well, I'm doing a little search for it now. Here we go. Man on the internet looks up something live on YouTube. Okay, it was 2002.
Okay, there we go. So it's often referred to in especially people who, you know, live in America, like a lot of titles that aren't as big out here as this quite infamous box office bomb of the early 2000s. So, and when you think about it, I suppose that would have been after a big run of Eddie Murphy having quite a big hits into the, you know, the late 90s. So let's have a look at what this movie is they're talking about.
We shall indeed. I'm looking at a few screen grabs at the moment going,
I think it's a really bad space movie.
It looks like a pretty dodgy... The Adventures of Pluto Nash, The Man on the Moon, is the subtitle. And I can tell you quite clearly that there is no streaming options here in Australia.
Damn, I'm sorry, audience, I didn't... But hey, if it's rarer, it means it's ripe for being discovered. So sometimes you've got to dig a little bit deeper.
Sometimes these movies can just be watched for free on YouTube, let's face it. So that's something I'll be checking out myself. Oh dear. Okay, so there we go. From Dude, Where's My Car? To The Adventures of Pluto Nash. That seems like quite a jump.
I'm pretty impressed with myself for recommending something that's at least in the 2000s. It's very modern of me.
It is. Wow, you're coming into the 20th century.
21st century. Blame me not having my list handy and going off memory. There were other corkers, Trevor, but you've avoided them just for now.
Oh, good. Okay, so... there we go. So if anybody out there wants to have their say on The Adventures of Pluto Nash, it's very easy to get in touch with us. Just send an email to redeem@rufusproject.com or leave a comment on the Rufus Project Presents Facebook page, or even join our Patreon at patreon.com/rufusproject. You'll not only get access to, you'll get early access to all our podcasts, as well as a whole pile of exclusive audio and video content. Now, Christian, I understand you've got, you're doing a bunch of, in these lockdown times, we can't unfortunately party together.
I can't believe we're saying that 4 months later, but yeah, we're still doing a few online parties, which we might have mentioned last time, so probably the best thing I can say is, head to Facebook, Brisbane Retro, and Christian Fletcher Events, or christianfletcher.com. We've got all sorts of things there happening every weekend, because in Brisbane, venues aren't allowing dancing. So what's the point of having a dance party? So let's go online and crank the music up at home and create your own dance party. So that's kind of what we're doing at the moment. So keep a lookout on the websites or on Facebook, because there'll always be something happening. And even when this finishes, they'll be back to doing venues again.
We shall return in the foreseeable future. I know we're not doing this on a regular basis at the moment, but we're doing what we can, given...
Yeah, everything's up in the air. So.
All the oddities of our time.
Mm-hmm.
So
2020. And hey, at least you can look back and go, at least these guys reviewed this movie in 2020. Dude, where's our car? Where's my car? So
because we know that was... what everyone was crying out for.
Oh, yeah. It'll go viral next week.
We'll see. We'll see. And so we shall return in the very near future with another redeeming features to see if we can redeem The Adventures of Pluto Nash from 2002.
Don't blame me. Thanks so much, everybody.
We can totally blame you, and we will see you next time. Farewell.
39,000 miles from Earth, in the blackness of space, there is a giant rock called the Moon. And in the year 2087, its future will be in the hands of one man. Eddie Murphy is...
Pluto Nash?
Pluto?
Pluto Nash?
It is a pleasure to meet me. Come on!
The battle between pretty evil...
Let's get it right this time.
...and pretty good...
Oh, yeah, look at that. Look at me.
...begins...
Well, we were thinking a little more, bubblage.
Hey!
Oh, yeah.
Eddie Murphy.
A pleasure to meet you, Pluto.
You married twins, huh?
No, they're not twins. I met the perfect woman, and then I had a clone.
Which one's which?
Who cares?
The Adventures of Pluto Nash.
Whoa! Why don't you take these Hillaries? We appreciate you helping us out.
But it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. IMDb says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.